I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Dead Rock Stars with Mick Wall and Joel McIver.
Welcome to Dead Rock Stars. If you want to hear tales about faxes, spewing macho poetry, chip pan fires, milk as an aphrodisiac, and about our hero of the hour rummaging about in the dressing up box, then please stick around for the very first episode of this new podcast in which we, seasoned journalists that we are, talk about the true stories behind the rock names that you know and love and hate, who are no longer with us, hence the title of the series. My name is Joel McIver. I'm the author of several books about loud music generally, heavy metal, hard rock. And I'm here with my friend, my great friend, Mick Wall, the man who puts the wall in Hadrian's Wall, who has written... more books than I have, met them all, been backstage, done obscene things with many people. So tell me, Mick, how are you today?
Well, I'm the wall in Hadrian's Wall, yeah. Which is an amazing thing to discover at my enormous age.
I just dreamt that up.
I can tell, yeah, absolutely. Now, it's very nice to be here. I'm not dead, so I'm glad we're doing this.
Well, and we thought that living presenters would do best.
Yes.
In the Dead Rock Stars podcast.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Yeah. So today, for number one, we're talking about someone who is close to all our hearts.
Definitely
He's
dead.
He's definitely dead. 2.5 years coming up, something like that, since he departed this mortal coil.
Two and a bit.
It's late 2015, wasn't it? We are, of course, talking about the late Motorhead singer Ian Lemmy Kilmister. Right, now I met him a bunch of times. I had a few drinks with him backstage. I got to know him a bit, but my experience pales in comparison to yours, mate, because you knew him fairly well. Am I right in saying that?
I knew Lemmy pretty well, and I knew him for a very, very long time. Well, there's my first sighting of the Great Beast, and then there was my actual interaction a la Attenborough and the Gorillas. As a pale, rosy-cheeked callow youth of whimsical airs, would often go to Portobello Road Market in London's Notting Hill Gate area. And in those days, the early 70s, it was a great place to get what was known then as a quid deal. You would meet the man with the very long hair, and he would like tell you about how it was growing on the side of the mountain. And, you know,
he was Welsh.
Yes, he was indeed Welsh. Welsh / Indian. As were many hippies in those days. And and you could buy records and hippie clothes and, you know, good days,
this
man.
Is the 70s, right?
This is the early 70s,
right.
Pre-punk.
God.
Right. And the first time I saw Lemmy, he was in Hawkwind at the time, and they were doing one of their many regular sort of free spots on a Saturday afternoon underneath the flyover.
Yeah, and were you a fan of Hawkwind, actually?
Well, I loved Silver Machine, and Silver Machine was a big hit when I was 14. Mm. But I wouldn't have been going to Portobello Road probably, you know, till I was like 15 and fully grown as a man.
Yeah. I mean, all that sort of, let's be honest, from this point of view, it's kind of hippie, spacey nonsense from one point of view. Do you think it stands up?
Sorry, hang on.
I'm talking about Hawkwind.
Hawkwind does nonsense.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to take that view.
No, that's not a concept I recognise at all. Now, in the early 70s, let me tell you something.
Yeah, yeah.
There was the Pink Floyd, if you happen to have been at Cambridge and Eton. And then there was Hawkwind, who were for the likes of me and you.
Mm.
And they were, as Lemmy once said to me, Hawkwind were like the Pink Floyd, except with Hawkwind, the spaceship was always broken. and that's exactly what it was. And let me tell you what else, nonsense indeed.
Yeah.
When you've got a 6'5" Amazonian woman naked, cavorting in the late summer dappled sunlight of Portobello Road and many Chillums.
What a beautiful woman.
Yes. Stacia Blake.
Yes. Yeah. Let me tell you something. At the age of 15, no internet. No internet porn. But this was in the flesh, as it were. In the flesh. But juxtaposed, here's Stacia, who really was incredibly mind-bogglingly gorgeous.
Yes, she was.
And standing next to her is what looks like the biker from hell.
Yeah.
Very scary guy, he seemed to me.
Yeah. Those teeth, right?
Well, very few teeth.
Yeah.
Very few teeth. More warts than teeth.
He was never a model or an advocate of healthy living, particularly.
Lemmy? Well, no.
In fact, we're jumping a bit forward, right? But he made it to 70 years old, didn't he?
Just about.
Apparently, I read this. More people die immediately after their birthday than at other times because people hang on for these things, right? If they're ill, they hang on for their birthday. Right. For him, obviously, it was important because it was his 70th birthday. No, no one would have predicted him living that long, would they?
I think he was more hanging on for the next blowjob, personally, knowing Lemmy as I did. I don't think birthdays meant a great deal for him. This is the man who, you know, famously sang about not wanting to live forever.
Yeah, right.
I pulled him up on it, you know, as you would. I said, well, look, Townsend had Hope I Die Before I Grow Old.
Yeah.
Well, he's really fucking old now, so that looks silly.
It's not worked out for him.
That's not worked out at all, really. I said, what about you with I Don't Want to Live Forever? So what, you know, and he said, no. What I mean is I'd like to go the day before forever.
By the way, listeners, and we do appreciate you tuning in, Mick and I have a sort of long-standing habit of going out for a curry every few months. And what we do is, on these occasions, is we have a few drinks, and we essentially do what we're doing now, which is exchange stories about the people we've met. And when we were putting together ideas for this series, Lemmy was the first guy we came up with because, from my point of view, Mick, he was unique. I know people talk bullshit all the time about there won't be another Lemmy, there can't be this, that and the other. I think in this case the hyperbole might have been right, would you say? There isn't really another Lemmy around, is there? No.
No, there was none before and there'll be none now.
So what was it about him then that made him what he was?
There was his peculiar lifestyle, which he was utterly unashamed about.
So what was that then? Let's break it down. What did he do? I mean, we know he took a lot of speed. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I don't think it's just the speed. Loads of rock stars take drugs. Yeah. Loads of rock stars drink. Loads of rock stars have sex. Those are sort of defining facts about being a rock star.
Right.
Otherwise, why would you want to be a rock star if you didn't want to do that?
Yeah.
You know,
that's why people are fascinated with the idea of it, aren't they? That's probably why people are tuning in, you know, because they want to hear what goes on backstage.
With Lemmy, you know, you can take that to the nth degree. But with him, that wasn't the special sauce, as it were. That wasn't the cosmic appeal. With Lemmy, especially in the 60s and 70s, we grew up. I don't know if kids today. I can't
kids
believe
these
I
days.
Fucking said that. But anyway, I don't know how in contemporary society people realise quite what a revolutionary world these guys built for us.
Yeah.
You know, there were no maps drawn, no rules written. And Lemmy very much exemplified that idea of the rock star speaking truth to power, the rock star not doing it for the money.
Yeah. Because he never had any, right? He was always broke.
Whatever money he had, he spent. By the end, he did have some money. I mean, I'd like to have the kind of money Lemmy had at the time he died. But then, you know, he always had to keep working. I mean, he just burned through it like there was no tomorrow. Because for Lemmy, there really wasn't any tomorrow. He lived in a kind of perpetual today. But, you know, it's a lost idea now, this idea of rock stars that, you know, leave money on the table.
Yeah.
Because they actually just want to be free. They're symbols of freedom.
Yeah.
They're symbols of doing it in the way they want to do it and to hell with what anybody else thinks. And so many fake it.
Yeah.
Well, they start out like that, and the minute they get the mansion and the Yoko Ono wife, you know, forget it, it's over. Do people know about his name? Because Lemmy was always famous for borrowing money. I worked at Step Forward Records, a little punk label, in 78.
Yeah.
And that was just off the Portobello Road. Mm. And there was a pub there, name I now cannot remember, but, you know, the Red Bell, the Lion's Tail. Whatever.
Anyone who emails us and lets us know the name of the pub will get a broad smile of recognition from us.
He'd be in that pub at the fruit machine, and he'd see you, and you kind of would avert your gaze because you knew it was coming. He'd go, what? Let me a quid. You know, you know, and but
straight
if he won, he would come back and give you like 100 pennies, you know, or 52p's. Or but back in the 70s, you couldn't go near. You could, hello, mate, how you doing? Without him going, Lemmy a quid.
Yeah. It's funny because in his autobiography,
it started as Lemmy a quid.
In his autobiography, he denies all knowledge of this.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, Lemmy was also one of the world's greatest liars.
Was he now?
Of course.
In a kind of roguish way.
In a mythological way.
Yeah.
He didn't lie so much as write the correct version of history according to him.
Well, don't we do that ourselves?
No, I've never told a lie.
No, of course not,
in
Mick.
My life.
Did he ever sell out at all?
I think he tried to. You know, I mean, we all try to, don't
he
we?
Failed to sell out.
Well,
I love that idea.
You know, I mean, it's the only thing he ever failed at, I think. God bless him, he did try. I mean, when Motorhead's career in the 80s faded here in Britain, when the Three Amigos lineup of Filthy Phil, Fast Eddie and Lemmy...
Sadly all departed.
You know, they lost the magic chemistry, the formula, the image, and their career was absolutely going downhill in terms of record sales here. So they got a new label, got a new manager, moved to Los Angeles.
Sony, wasn't it? They signed to Sony.
Yes, and that was
unlikely sort of deal when you think about it.
Well, the reason they signed to Sony was because they hooked up with a guy called Phil Carson.
Yeah.
He was Zeppelin's go-to guy. He signed AC/DC. He signed Yes, ELP.
Now, you spoke to Phil for your Lemmy book, I believe.
I've known Phil for years. So I've spoken to him for a few of my books, but definitely for Lemmy. And Phil was based in LA.
Yeah.
He had a great relationship with Sony. He was managing the band Bonham at the time, Jason Bonham's then group, who were also signed to Sony. You know, he had a good thing going.
Yeah.
So he was able to put a deal together on the basis that if Phil wants a deal for this band and they've got a track record in the UK, people don't really know them in America, this could be good. So they signed to Sony and they did great things like The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson playing. And, you know, he managed to sneak him into the Grammys one year and... All this very American establishment stuff, in order to get them taken seriously and kind of relaunch the brand, as it were. And Lemmy bought into all of that. He was desperate for it to happen.
I remember seeing photos of him wearing his little short shorts, very tanned.
Yeah.
Living the LA thing. Got his teeth done, didn't he?
He got his teeth done. Yeah. And as he once said to me about his hair, we have the technology.
Yeah. Because it was starting to go, wasn't it?
It was well going. Yeah. I mean, you show me a 55-year-old speed freak that has any hair left other than his bollocks, and I'll show you a liar.
He looked shit hot, though, didn't he, when he went to America? He looked completely rejuvenated, you think?
Listen, he loved L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I lived in L.A. for a couple of years, and he was arriving as I was leaving. You know, I mean, the Rainbow Bar and Grill, it wasn't just his spiritual home. It was his home. You know, I mean, this is the place, in case people don't know, where, you know, famously Led Zeppelin used to have their own table at the back and surrounded by their entourage and groupies and drug dealers. And
it's on the Sunset Strip.
It's on the Sunset Strip. I used to go there myself.
Yeah.
Purely in a professional.
A couple of light ales for medicinal purposes?
Possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Would you say you were friends with Lemmy? Was anyone friends with
him? Well, I don't know if Lemmy ever had that many friends.
Mm.
He had a lot of very good mates. And I would say I was a good mate. If your definition of a good mate is someone you lend money to, then I was a good mate of Lemmy's.
And did you ever get it back? Or is that
I did. No, in fairness to him, he actually wrote me a cheque, which I just thought is even worth putting in the bank, you know.
I think it was Phil Campbell, Motorhead's later guitar player, who said, Lemmy's a complete bastard, and he will shag your missus, or to that effect, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was there some truth in that? I mean,
there was 100% truth.
So was he a lovable rogue, or was he actually a pain in the arse, you know, because of these
I think Lemmy's height, and this is no exaggeration, he was drinking about a gallon of whiskey a day. He was taking about 7 grams of speed day. And then he would go out in the night, you know, and you know, smoke about 100 joints and snort cocaine and... Because he used to have the leather jackets with the little pockets, and there'd always be something in each pocket. I kid you not.
A little treat.
When I did his PR in the mid-90s, he'd sit there, 2 a.m, and I'm thinking, I've got to leave, I've got to go to bed, And he'd suddenly go, and I go, no! No, not more!
I've got something for you, Mick. That's not really how he spoke, is it?
Well, it was kind of like that, The only drug he had a problem with was heroin.
Yes.
Although, of course, he did try it. There wasn't anything Lemmy didn't try, you know.
He had friends who died from taking it, and the love of his life died as well.
The love of his life he found dead in the bath from...
Which is horrendous. I mean, that really is.
Well, that's going to change you.
Absolutely.
I mean, there were a couple of occasions in his life when he came close to love, as it were, real love or, you know, connectedness, relationship, long-term relationship. But, I mean, he said to me, he said, look, you know, I'm happy to stay with... one woman for the rest of my life until I meet someone with bigger tits and a nicer smile and a shorter skirt.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure,
and you would laugh because it was true. So my point is, yes, of course he was a bastard.
Yeah.
All rock stars are fucking bastards. There should be a sign on the wall. your favourite rock star who you look up to for life lessons is often a terrible bastard, okay?
I always have the scales fall from my eyes whenever I go out with you and say, look, what's rock star X like? What's rock star Y really like? And you say, oh, he's a total wanker.
Terrible bastard.
And I feel like a sort of idiot, you know, because I'd kind of bought into the mythos.
You bring the light. You are a bringer of light.
Thank you for
you
putting
are a bringer
it that
of
way.
Light. No, you are. You make me feel better.
Lucifer,
about
the light bringer.
Well, you know, it's a thin line. It's a thin line. But my point is, Charles.
Yes.
If I can vaguely remember what it was.
No, we're doing well.
So they're all bastards.
Yeah.
Let's face it, most people are fucking bastards when you get right down to it.
We all have that side.
Well, not me, but...
Producer Ian.
Yeah, oh, definitely him. Yeah. Jeez, he doesn't even hide it.
I think he might be listening.
No, he never listens to what we do, let's be fair. My point is we forgave him. Not just because he's Lemmy the lovable rogue, but because he's Lemmy who made a band... It didn't sound like anybody else.
Right.
He's Lemmy that inspired, seriously inspired, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, all of them, in fact.
Yeah, well, you know, that attitude, whether it's real or not,
The
attitude seems to have inspired a lot of people. Be like Lemmy, act like Lemmy.
I know, I love it when you see Kate Moss in a Motorhead t-shirt.
Oh, don't even start me. I wrote Lemmy's obituary for The Guardian a couple of years ago.
I was waiting for when you were about to drop The Guardian into the conversation.
Did you hear the clang?
Do you write for The Guardian often, Joel?
Well, occasionally they pull me in as an obit writer.
They drag you in against your will.
They drag me kicking and screaming to write an obituary, yes.
And then later you frame them, don't you?
Well, I do have a couple actually stuck on my on the wall in my office. I did Jeff Hanneman's from Slayer, and I was quite proud of that. The people at The Guardian are very open-minded, but you wouldn't necessarily expect their obits desk to have heard of Slayer. So I had to work a little bit hard to get that in. But you know,
how many emails did you send begging them to write?
No, I merely suggested it.
Liar.
I floated it past them. They gave me a full page. So my point being that The Guardian...
Did we finish
to do this
my point?
Because
I spent a long time trying to make my point, but now we're on to your point. So what is your point?
Well, my point is only this, that I knew him slightly. You knew him rather well, much better than I did. And when I was generating this obituary for him, which was a long one, you know, and lots of space, it's a very difficult thing to do because you don't want to be too sentimental. You don't want to be too reverential. You want to tell the story straight, but make it clear what the guy was, what his essence was, you know. And in doing so, I inevitably managed to lean on some of the mythology that may not have been actually factual, because you do. You're trying to explain to someone who has never heard of Motorhead why Lemmy matters, what he was like, how much the image of the man represents the truth of the man. And it ties in with my earlier point that perhaps a lot of people aren't aware of how much of it was artifice and how much of it was media spin.
Right, right.
My impression is that because he wasn't a handsome man, he didn't really hold back on what he said in interviews, that you largely got the real Lemmy. Am I right in saying that?
Definitely. Okay. I think sometimes to his detriment.
Yeah, right.
I actually found him very handsome.
Did you?
Yeah.
By the way, I think they were moles on his cheek, not warts. I've spent quite a while trying to clarify this point. He was adamant that they were moles.
They were the biggest fucking moles.
Yeah, they were like nipples.
Yeah.
They were huge.
Yeah, they weren't moles.
And
mate.
He shaved
them. He had them grafted on in LA. He had his teeth done. He had his hair done. He had extra moles grafted on.
Extra ones grafted
with hairs.
On.
Yeah,
were they actually like a cow's udder or something? Is that what
you they were. I don't even want to. They're so fucking repellent. I mean, you know, you could have your eye out with one of those.
Now, women, many women, I should say, loved him. Right.
Deeply.
And enjoyed his company.
Yes.
You know,
and I can
about?
Tell you about a couple.
Well, you look at me and you, who are like Brad Pitt, and then you look at Lemmy, who was less like Brad Pitt. Nonetheless, his strike rate, shall we say, would be many hundreds times more than mine. You clearly are a different kettle of fish.
Well, this is an interesting thing about Lemmy,
and it
goes into another aspect of his character, okay?
Yeah.
Because the lovable rogue, the biker / rock and roller, the speed, the moles, everything,
you know,
the whole thing. But here's what isn't said very often, and I'm trying to remember her name. She was Steven Tyler's girlfriend.
Bebe Buell?
Bebe Buell.
I have no idea if I pronounced that right.
Bebe Buell. Yeah. Well, Bebe Buell in the late 70s was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever met in my entire life. She ended up with Todd Rundgren, with Jimmy Page.
Did she end up with you, Mick?
If she'd played her cards right...
You would have had a chance.
She might have had a chance. But at the time, I was very busy with my work.
Mm.
Anyway, Bebe told me she never slept with Lemmy, but she said a very good friend of hers slept with Lemmy.
Yeah.
Her friend told her Lemmy was the gentlest, kindest, most considerate lover she'd ever had.
Mm.
And I have been told this by other women that I did know.
Yeah.
But that feeds into a side of Lemmy I'd love to mention, because Lemmy was extremely well-read.
Yes.
I once went into his bedroom in a place in Ladbroke Grove he lived in, and he had, you know, Nazi regalia everywhere and books on the Second World War.
Yeah.
And then right by the bed, yeah, where he'd obviously been reading in bed the night before, probably several nights before, because he only went to bed once a month, let's be honest, was P.G. Wodehouse. Loved Jeeves. He loved that arch humour.
It's amazing, sort of fragile comedy that's beautifully, elegantly put together. It's
I think it says that, you know, he was a funny man.
A wordsmith, I think.
He was a funny man. He was a great wordsmith.
Yeah.
I mean, the lyrics to Ace of Spades, a wonderful limerick poem, bawdy 17th century street anthem. I mean, just beautifully put together.
So he's obviously keen on words, keen on the language. So there was a brain there, and I made this point again in the obit that I wrote, that he was, I don't know if it's going too far to say he was an intellectual, but if it is, it's not going very too far. You know, the man was a brain. He was politically quite astute, I think, and informed.
Yeah.
He certainly had convictions.
Can I just end my point?
You may, may.
Because you made a point and an earlier point.
I keep trying to butt in.
I would just like to...
It's all about me, Mick.
But to show you something about Lemmy.
All right.
In 1986, imagine the lights
picture
go down.
The scene.
Picture the scene. Lights go down. Spotlight on me in a crowded bar. And my mother had just died, okay?
Yeah.
She died young, la, la, la. It was just a disease. It wasn't an accident. It was just one of those things.
Yeah.
And I'm 28 at the time. I'm at a gig. Mm. And in those days in the 80s, any gig you went to in London, and I mean any gig, Lemmy would be there, either on the stage or in the bar, usually the bar. I'm in this gig. My mum's just died.
Yeah.
People going, hi, Mick, how's it going? I don't go, well, my mum just died,
no,
you know. And I don't know how he'd heard about it, but suddenly Lemmy's sidled up and he goes to me, I heard your mum just died. And I went, oh, not at all prepared for this. And I was like, didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Wrong context.
Yes.
And I can't remember the exact words he said, but he spoke to me extremely tenderly. Mm. I would say for a good 10 minutes.
Good Lord.
And at that point, he was kind of batting people away because he just wanted to say his piece to me.
See, that says a lot, I think.
I couldn't believe it. He had more to say about it than I did because I wasn't old enough to have the words. I didn't know. And at the funeral and that, I'd spent most of my time comforting other people.
Yes. Mm.
But I didn't have to do that with him. He knew exactly the words.
See, that takes a certain interpersonal, I don't want to say skill, but a kind of a warmth, I think.
Empathy.
Thank you is the word I'm searching for. Yes.
But also a great, you know, the irony here is I can't think of the word for speaking well.
loquaciousness? Eloquence.
Eloquence. Thank God you're here.
Yeah. invoice you for that.
He had empathy, eloquence, and there must be a 30.
Oh, we'll think of something.
Yeah, we will.
I wanted
it's probably
ask
in
you,
his, one of his zipped pockets,
well,
that 30.
I might be able to link to it. I'm going to invoke an unlikely name now, and that is the late astronomer Sir Patrick Moore.
Yes.
Who I got to know slightly because I'd interviewed him a couple of times. And I went down to his house and got some photos of him taken with my kids, and you know, it was a very nice little visit. On his death, I put a picture of him on Facebook, and in the picture he's holding a copy of my Motorhead book, which I'd written. He was quite pleased with it, actually. He said, hey, this Lemmy fellow comes from Stoke-on-Trent, so do I. And I went,
that's very good.
Oh, wonderful. And I put this picture up. Said, oh, yeah, you know, how funny. You know, I wonder if Sir Patrick's enjoyed my book about Motorhead. And someone, a journalist whose opinion I respect, wrote, I think they were both closet Nazis.
Ooh.
Mm. And I asked him to justify this. And he said, well, Sir Patrick was the leader of a political party. It wasn't UKIP, but it was along the lines of UKIP in
right.
the 70s.
Well, how long ago? In the 70s?
I think it was in the 70s. And Lemmy, of course, had his Nazi memorabilia collection.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I disagreed with this. And I said, no, this is bollocks for loads of reasons. And in doing so, and this is my point, really, I referred back to a conversation I'd had with Lemmy in about the year 2000. I was interviewing him for some magazine. And what had happened before that interview was that someone had written into Q magazine about Lemmy's supposed right-wing Nazi political views, based on the fact that he had a massive collection of Nazi stuff. I took it upon myself to write to Q magazine.
Did you?
And said, this is bollocks. I work for Record Collector magazine. I've interviewed Lemmy a couple of times. His views are pretty much always left of centre. the fact that he collects the stuff, you might well successfully argue that it's in poor taste, but I wouldn't go any further than that. His views don't even resemble Nazism, so anyone who thinks they do is either wrong or they're not thinking clearly. I told Lemmy that I'd had this dialogue with Q magazine. He was super pleased with this and asked me to fax him the original letter and my letter in response.
Wow.
Faxes went backward and forward. And at the end of the dialogue, he sent me this long response by fax, handwritten, which I still have.
I have handwritten faxes from Lemmy, which I will tell you about when you finish.
It was his big thing, the communication by fax. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Was it in Gothic sort of... No, because mine was.
One of his... It was quite a nice hand, as they say.
Right.
You know? And I remember at the top of the fax sheet, it had his phone number plus Lemmy, bass vocals. Bass stroke vocals at the top. You know, he'd obviously typed that in.
In case you... had forgotten.
Now, me personally, when I look at people who collect Nazi stuff, Jeff Hanneman, who I mentioned earlier, he was a massive collector of Nazi stuff. I mean, I wouldn't have the fucking stuff in my house, but
keep it in the shed, don't you?
but would I...
Trunk of your car.
Would I castigate anyone who chose to collect the stuff because they like the aesthetic? No, I probably would not.
You know, he was extremely knowledgeable. Mm. So, you know, he was showing me a swastika and he was explaining how the Nazis... misappropriated it, that in fact the what we call the swastika goes back thousands of years.
Hindu or Indian symbol?
Yeah, it's a symbol of very good luck.
Right.
And Lemmy's PR at the time, I think you know Nita Patel.
Yeah.
Wonderful woman, Indian, and she was with us while he was showing this, and she recognised it immediately, something from weddings she'd been to. And
yeah.
So he was very knowledgeable about that. And it wasn't just... Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah.
Lemmy had swords from the First World War. He had daggers that went back to the Boer War. He had all kinds of stuff, but his own sort of special area of interest was the World War II Nazi regalia.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing, you know, because obviously I talked to Lemmy about it as well, and he said, listen, the love of my life was black.
Yes.
His current girlfriend at the time was black.
Yes.
He believed in personal freedom.
Mm.
He believed in, as long as what I do doesn't hurt you, then I should be able to do whatever I want. Mm. And you, whatever you want to do, as long as it doesn't hurt me or anybody else, you're cool. You go for it. You do your thing.
Mm.
He also said, and I thought this was interesting, he said, you know, if the Nazis came back today, he said, I'd be the first one they arrested and put up against the wall.
Of course. Yeah. You can't argue with these things.
But can I...
Whatever it is you're going to
bring
do.
Bring you back to another...
My
earlier point.
I love the way you're asking my permission there. Keep doing that.
You talked about faxes.
Yes.
Quick story that always makes me laugh. Mm. And I think it kind of shows the sensitive side of Lemmy and also the bastard, if you like.
Yeah.
But also funny. Mm. So anyway, I can't remember getting into this, but we're talking about poetry.
Mm.
And he starts telling me how, you know, he apart from lyrics, he writes reams of poetry. And at the time, I actually was having some of my poetry published. I don't know why I'm laughing.
I didn't know you wrote poetry.
I'm a great poet.
Does it rhyme?
No,
for Christ's sake.
That's
Nick.
Not poetry.
It's not real then, is it?
No. No. Anyway.
Next time you have to read some of your poetry on this.
Yeah, I think Ian might step in. I think I could read it all day, but whether it'd make the actual broadcast, that's debatable.
Well, it should.
Yeah, I can see you looking at him and him going like this. You must be fucking joking.
Yeah, that's it. Shut him up.
Anyway, so we're talking to Lemmy about poetry. He says, I really write a lot of poetry. I said, wow, I'd love to see some, because I was writing a lot myself at the time.
Mm.
Next thing, because he's in LA, he's 8 hours behind.
Yeah.
I'm in bed at about 2 a.m. one night, and I could hear...
Yeah, like the football results thing.
Yeah. And it went on and on because the bastard's sending me dozens of pages,
yeah, as
right?
As he said, reams of it, right, yeah.
And I had this old-fashioned fax machine where it wasn't like this clean A4 paper that you get now. In fact, we don't have Mac fax machines now, but
no. It
was that greasy stuff that was all on one roll.
I know it, yeah.
Anyway, about 10 foot of this comes through, and I'm looking at it in the morning over a cup of tea and, you know, bleary, and I couldn't read it all because, A, there was too much of it, and, B, it was handwritten.
Yeah.
But it was in this very kind of stylized Gothic hand.
Really?
That's how I remember it.
Yeah. Are you sure you weren't under the influence of something, Mick?
Well, it's possible. No. And this thing was, I just remember it was like, this isn't a direct quote, obviously, because it's a long time ago, but it was, from the hills came the hell claw of Satan. And it was like, the blood flowed quickly over the virgin's toes.
And was he entirely serious? Or was he taking the piss?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think he was serious.
Because
you could write a page or two of that taking the piss, but there were about six different poems, all long poems. And I just imagine him speeding all night.
Yeah,
he's been up for five nights. And now he's getting to the good stuff with his poetry, you know. Yeah. Hegemon came from the thundercloud.
And was it sort of embarrassing Jim Morrison-style poetry, or was there some value to it, as you recall?
Well,
as a poet yourself, Mick.
Well, speaking as a contemporary poet, and a contemporary of such poets as Lemmy.
Never mind Philip Larkin.
Bruce Dickinson.
Bruce Dickinson.
Enormously fantastic literary figures of our time.
Literary giants.
Giants. Yes, much better than Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Morrison is all like...
It's not setting the bar very high.
The ghost of the dead Indian came down the highway, the child with his frog in his head.
Doesn't Jim Morrison at one point say, death and my cock?
Yeah, death of my cock.
Death of my cock.
Yeah, I think that was the best line he ever wrote, actually, speaking as an older man.
We'll have to talk about Jim Morrison, won't we, on this?
Definitely, but back to Lemmy.
Yeah.
So I'm reading this, and I'm actually very taken aback that he's taken the time to feed these endless pages into a fax machine.
Yeah.
Handwritten. So I thought, wow, do you know what? I'll send him some of mine. So I printed out three or four poems, and I faxed him back.
Yeah.
And guess what?
I don't know, what?
Fuck all happened, nothing. He was this much interested.
Maybe he was speechless because it was so good.
Maybe he just didn't give a fuck about anything I had to say or write or anything. And I think that's very typical of pretty much every rock star I've ever met. One or two exceptions.
So, in a way, does this sum him up? He didn't give a fuck?
He didn't give a fuck profoundly.
Yeah.
But I do also think, especially the sort of last, his American years, put it that way.
Yeah.
I think he'd turned not giving a fuck slightly into a protective shield, a kind of comfort zone.
Mm.
Because in the 70s, he loved Hawkwind. You know, he wept for days after he was fired.
Yeah. Didn't he shag all their girlfriends when he got kicked out?
After they fired him for taking the wrong drugs.
That was it.
Because they were all into acid and he was into speed, which, as Dave Brock, Hawkwind's leader, told me at the time, was considered poor show.
God.
Very poor show.
Elitism within space rock.
Yeah. There are the captains and then there are the crew.
The peasantry.
Yeah. And Lemmy was the crew. Unfortunately, it was a poor show with the speed. So they sacked him. He said, and he cried. He cried for days.
Christ.
And he said, but when he got home, he got his own back by shagging all their old ladies.
Well, he had 30 years of the last laugh, didn't he, really? Or 40 years, really? When you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to Dead Rock Stars with Mick Wall and Joel McIver.
You know, Motorhead was originally called Bastard.
Yeah.
because he was a bastard. Mm. I mean, you know, his mother and father weren't married. Yes. And that's what they called those people in the 50s,
yeah.
Like myself. Mm. People call you bastard, Joel, for different reasons.
Yes.
But I just thought I'd make that clear. Lemmy was called bastard for all the above reasons and more. But in the 70s and 80s, he was a man who was determined to do it his way and believed. Mm. You know, you talk about you see the scales fall from your eyes.
Yeah.
Lemmy was the great romantic. I mean, he was an enormously innocent person in the 70s and 80s.
To make that point. Right.
He really was. And, you know, and he believed in rock and roll. He believed in the 60s ethos of freedom and equality for everybody.
Mm-hmm. He was asked once how acid had changed him.
Right.
In all seriousness, he was asked that question, which I think is a fantastic question, which I've stolen a few times and asked a few interviewees.
Right.
Because it really makes people step back, those who have taken it and gained something from it. And he said essentially it made him a more tolerant person.
Yeah.
Which I fully understand, you know, there's something about seeing the wiring behind the boards.
And, absolutely.
And seeing your place in the firmament a little bit more clearly.
Your tiny, tiny place
right.
in the giant firmament.
Yeah. You know, so just one more thing I want to say about Lemmy, really, from your experience. Did he, in a sense, hide behind the sort of slightly comedy image that began with, and I'll just run through, there was Stand By Your Man, right, that he did with Wendy O. Williams. There was Tiz Was. There was The Young Ones. And then in later life, he did that Kit Kat advert. He did, I don't know, I can run out of examples, but you know what I mean? There was a kind of a family-friendly Lemmy image, which appeared.
He did a movie with the comedy
of course.
People as well.
Eat the Rich, it was called. Yeah. And he cameoed in Hardware, a science fiction film. So he did stuff.
Yeah.
Most of which was not entirely serious outside Motorhead. Was
and he
a
did
good
that
thing,
lovely slow version of Ace of Spades for a...
Beer ad, Cronenberg.
Yeah, and the last ad he did was for Milk.
Milk?
Yeah.
Which amazing.
Apart from rubbing on his... cock. I don't think Lemmy had ever used milk in his life.
Can you testify in front of a court that he rubbed the milk on his cock?
I couldn't testify in front of a court, but stood at a bar 6 pints in, I can tell you with as a matter of absolute fact that the only time he ever touched the stuff.
But why would you apply it to the old chap?
Well, because the old chap is then venturing into places where milk is appreciated.
I see.
Joel. The mouth. I've got to spell it out. The mouth.
Is it more nutritious that way?
Yes. I don't think you need to,
overthink it.
I don't think.
What about this comedy image then?
Okay, well, this kind of is a bit like what I was saying about the comfort zone of I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
He traded on it.
Yeah.
But I think he also detested it on some level. You know, there was the famous occasion when he walked off of the set of Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
He did.
There were other occasions when he walked out on things because. You know, in his heart, Lemmy was a purist. And Lemmy, you know, worked for Hendrix. You know, he'd been a roadie for Hendrix.
And learned a lot from him. He admired him greatly for his polite attitude to women, I believe, which was quite progressive.
Absolutely. Well, Lemmy was a gentleman. And that's another reason why women loved him. It wasn't just that he was a rock star. He had good manners. He had a good upbringing.
Yeah.
He was very middle class in many ways. Actually, I'll tell you one quick story before I get to the comfort zone.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
I went to see him once. This isn't about, I don't know, 79 or 80 or something.
Yeah.
And turned up at the place he was living in at the time, in Edgware Road somewhere. It was like a bedsit.
Yeah.
By the way, all he ate, to my knowledge ever, were either toasted cheese sandwiches or chips. So in this little bedsit, he had a chip fry. You know the old-fashioned, like in a chip shop where you lower it into the thing?
If you saw the film they made about him, the opening scene is him making his own chips in a deep-fat fryer.
Well, he used to make a cheese sandwich and throw that in as well.
Deep fried cheese.
Yeah.
But he never got fat, did he? He was always in good shape.
Do you want one? Okay. No, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah.
Never got fat. Well, as well as that one cheese sandwich.
Do you want
that
some one milk plate. On it? I've got some left over.
Yeah, the Lemmy fried cheese sandwich, chips, and milk.
I didn't
diet.
Use it all earlier.
Yeah. Put some spare. Do you want some? Here you go. Oh, I've spilled it down your leg. Again.
I'm sorry.
Let me finish my point from my earlier point.
You went round his house.
Flat,
rather.
And he'd had a fire on the chip fryer.
Oh, crikey.
So he'd called Doug Smith, his manager, said, get round here quick, I've set fire to the chip fryer.
He called his manager.
Goes, so what do you want me to do? Let me, I don't fucking know, you're my manager.
But that's a very diva-esque thing to do. I'm quite surprised.
Well, here we go. Okay, yeah. So this is like the next day. Doug has told me this. He says, look, his chip fryer's broken. He's got nothing to eat. Take him to the pub and just get him something. So I turned up and he comes to the door. And it's still like, you know, the smoke. And
yeah, yeah.
You know, he comes to the door dressed head to foot in an American Civil War uniform. Okay. From the South.
Confederates.
Confederate. He's in a complete Confederate uniform, including hat.
Bloody hell.
And boots. And he opened the door to me, like, just like normal. I just went, "You're not fucking going out looking like that." And he went, "What's wrong with it? That's very stylish." And I said, "Lemmy, please, we can't go down the pub, you know, with you dressed as fucking Colonel Custer or whoever he is. Or
Colonel Sanders, yeah.
Colonel Sanders. Fuck off, we're going. Have you brought any money?" I said, "Yeah, Doug will give me some money to give him as well." So we go down the pub, me in my early 80s garb of jeans, not much from different today. Jeans,
did you have
t-shirt.
A mullet at that point?
I was working on it.
Good. A training mullet.
It was a transitional period between the hippie hair to the waist, the punk hair to the sky, and what would now become a magnificent mullet.
Leave it long at the back, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Good on top. So none at the sides.
So you went to the pub.
We'd walk down the fucking street, me and Colonel Sanders, you know, with his moles, and we go into the pub.
Thank you.
And I suddenly realised he's quite camp because he was loving it. It reminded me of what it must have been like to walk down the street with Naked Civil Servant, that guy.
Quentin Crisp.
I can imagine walking down the street with Quentin Crisp in 1930.
Just sort of camping it up almost.
In a provocative,
yeah, sure,
entirely centre of attention way.
And he was loving this.
Loving it. Loving it. I think he'd gotten so used to it by then.
Yeah.
The, in fact, the kind of the Lemmy look as we now know it, I think it sort of ceased to have an effect.
No,
post-punk, everybody wore a leather jacket and looked threatening.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Now, no, he's going to dress as
that's
a Confederate
amazing.
General.
And did he attract attention when you're in the pub?
Oh, fuck yeah.
And he liked it?
He liked it if it was from women.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't like any attention from men. At all. He was very alpha male.
He wanted to lead the life he led, I think, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. But here's the thing about when I say the comfort zone. He gets to America.
Yeah.
Phil Carson sorts him out with an apartment, literally a walk from the Rainbow in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
This is Lemmy heaven.
Yeah.
So one thing and another, Phil bails out after a couple of albums. Sony dropped them. He gets a new manager who's also a real kind of daredevil guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Motorhead eke out kind of a living on fumes, kind of perpetual victory lap.
They really were.
Where they'd put out albums, which I know younger fans really enjoyed. And I'm often pulled up in my book, I get told off all the time because I sort of dismiss those albums somewhat. But I did at the time they came out.
Sure, yeah.
I just thought it was Lemmy by numbers. Whereas Overkill, Stone Dead Forever, all those things to me, I'd never heard anything like that before.
It was new and it was threatening, you know.
It was really
threatening. The stuff was intense.
It felt real.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
And also he'd adopted the hat. He became like an action figure.
Well, that's it. I don't want to say a parody of himself because that's not what I mean, but it would be understandable if people thought that that was what he had become. He became Lemmy with a trademark symbol after it, you know what I mean?
And for me, I often wondered if that was part of his... In your younger days, that's me saying fuck you to the world.
Yeah.
But when you get into your 60s, I think that's me saying I'm still cool. Don't forget me. Because he hadn't sold a million records.
No.
You know, he'd made money through writing million-selling songs for Ozzy Osbourne and things like that. But, you know, Slash would pay fealty to him. Is that how they say it? Fealty?
Yeah.
Lars would kiss his arse.
Of course.
Everybody kissed Lemmy's arse.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Richards would be Lemmy.
Yeah.
You know. But Lemmy never had the dough. He said to me once, he said, "How do you think I feel when I'm walking down the street in Los Angeles at the age of 65 and some 18-year-old kid yells, 'Lemmy, dude, Ace of Spades, man!'" He goes, "Do they think I haven't written another fucking song in 30 years?" And I'm thinking, well, that probably is what they're thinking.
Yeah.
That's your hit, mate.
Yeah.
That's your... Not his only hit, but that's his stairway to heaven in a way.
Exactly. You know? All right, good. Well, look, I mean... Lemmy, it was the obvious place to start with this series, I think. There won't be another one like him.
There really won't.
We should also tip the hat, should we not, to Fast Eddie Clark and Phil Taylor, who died in the last couple of years. Right, look, so we're going to sign off and we're going to give Lemmy, I think, marks, should we say out of five, as a star.
Five out of five.
I agree. I mean, you can't not. You know.
And also, too, not just a rock star. I mean, you know, people like Jeffrey Bernard.
Yes.
Or George Melly. Or, you know, these various kind of English...
Richard Harris.
Yeah.
Those people that took it to the extreme.
Yeah, they were really good at what they did.
Yeah.
But we remember them fondly for more than just what they did.
They transcended their niche. Right. His taste for excess...
I don't even know if it was... I think it was kind of a fundamental... Need. It's like saying he's liking for oxygen. you know.
But he didn't die of an overdose, you know. He didn't do like Duff McKagan did and drink 16 bottles of wine a day and have his pancreas removed. Lemmy died of essentially heart failure and prostate cancer at the age of 17. Now, that, to me, is not the net result of an incredibly unhealthy lifestyle.
Well, are you saying he died of natural causes?
Brought on and exacerbated by the life he led.
Because I bumped into Lemmy very, very briefly about 6 months before he died.
Mm.
He didn't recognise me.
Christ.
He didn't recognise anybody. And a photographer had the same experience and said he wept after seeing him because he was very, very ill for a very long time.
Mm.
You know, he was using a mobility scooter towards the end at these festivals, getting around.
It was attributed to diabetes, I believe.
Well, you know, how do you get diabetes type 2? You know, you get it through...
Well, you drink Jack Daniels and then you drink vodka and orange. That's a lot of sugar.
Yeah,
Jack Daniels. This is all turning into a health lecture now, isn't it? What are you doing, drinking orange juice?
Yeah, I often said to Lemmy, lay off the sugar.
Did you really?
No, did I? Fuck. Yeah,
His influence. I know Metallica pay a lot of lip service. They don't really sound like Motorhead, do they?
No, I think his musical legacy is what it is. Mm. I think in the same way that Black Sabbath had a very distinct sound, came at a very distinct time when it was very new.
Yeah.
And what came after clearly was influenced to some extent.
Right.
I mean, Lars Ulrich of Metallica ran the Motorhead fan club even as he was forming Metallica. You know, he toured with Motorhead over here as a teenager, very entitled, rich teenager. But nevertheless, he learned a lot of lessons from Lemmy when Lemmy was at his zenith, you know, as an artist and a younger man. Of course, Metallica then have gone on and influenced countless waves of bands and stuff. You know, when I remember interviewing Duff and Slash very early on, just after they'd done their first album.
Yeah.
And they couldn't shut up about Lemmy. And their favourite song was We Are the Road Crew.
Yeah.
So I think there's a definite musical legacy. However, I think Lemmy's influence does go further than that.
Yeah.
And I don't mean as an eccentric so much, but as a kind of a figurehead, if you like, for freedom, for not giving a fuck.
Mm.
That doesn't mean you don't care if the guy over there falls down and hurts himself.
Yeah.
It means you don't care what the guy over there thinks about you.
And that's a rare thing. You know, many of us say we don't care. Don't we?
Absolutely.
But actually, it needles us a bit when we get a bad review or what have you. You know?
Listen, it needled Lemmy too. I remember reviews.
So he was human in that sense. You know, that's all that is.
Their famous live album was No Sleep Till Hammersmith.
Mm.
Now, that phrase itself has gone into the lexicon.
Yeah.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So their famous live album was No Sleep Till Hammersmith. And then a few years later, they brought out another live album called Everything Louder Than Everything Else.
That's the one.
I reviewed it, and I didn't give it a very good review. Of course, I bump into him. Corners me in the bar again. This time, less tender, thoughtful words. What do you fucking like about it then? I said, it's not as good as No Sleep. No! He was like, it's like someone had just stabbed him. He went, no, don't say that. Say anything, but not that.
Bloody hell.
I'd pierced his heart with the one thing he truly didn't want to hear. And looking back, you know, I don't think that's a fair assessment at all. I'm sure, in fact, the second album was probably better than No Sleep. But
it's not about whether it's better or worse, whether you needed another one, frankly.
Back then, a live album was more of a landmark.
It was.
And I didn't feel they'd made enough good albums in between to justify another one.
Yeah. And he was pissed off with you?
Yeah, momentarily. And then I remember him coming up to me at a Donington. In the late 80s, I did a weekly music show for Sky called The Monsters of Rock.
Yes.
And he used to watch it. And he came up to me and gave me some advice. He said, you've got to grow some facial hair. He said, you know, you've got the hair, the jacket, the clothes, you know, the set with the gravestones and
all that.
And that shit, you know. And he said, but you look like fucking Bon Jovi or something, you know. It didn't mean I look like Bon Jovi. He meant, you know, you look like a sanitized,
no, I know what you mean.
Pretty
just,
boy twat.
I'm being quiet because I'm thinking back to the pictures that I've seen of you on that show, and you definitely do look a bit polite.
Well, it was downhill all the way after that. I've had many people tell me that.
We've talked a bit about his legacy. Would you give him stars for death as a career move? Now, that's not meant to be completely cynical. Has his profile risen since his death, as has been the case with so many late musicians that we could name?
Well, Ace of Spades became a bigger hit than it was first time around when he died.
Mm.
I think there is now a Lemmy industry that his management are... What's the polite word here? Are
committed to preserving.
Yes.
Committed to issue it. I mean, very, you know, well put. They did a covers album recently, didn't they?
They're very committed to preserving the musical legacy.
Did you hear their version, Motörhead's cover of Heroes?
I hated it.
Oh, I loved it.
No,
great.
No. Fucking awful. No.
Oh, well, we are polar opposites, though.
No, no, I'm great. Right. Yeah, so I'm well, right in this.
I have an opinion, but it's the wrong one.
I'm glad he tried that stuff. But to me, honestly, that shows me how desperate he was not to just be Lemmy of Motörhead, to show he could do more, that. Was more.
We'll be quick about this. I mean, the Ace of Spades, right? Is that really what people will always associate with Lemmy? That and shagging millions of groupies and taking speed? Is there any other aspect that is as important?
Ace of Spades will always be the calling card.
It will be, won't it?
Rolling Stones, yeah. Satisfaction.
Yeah.
Dylan.
Blown in the Wind, whatever.
Yeah, Blown in the Wind, or Roll Like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Dylan's got a few, actually.
Well, actually, Dylan has. And so have the Beatles. You know, they've got 100 songs they can remember for. Yeah. But yeah.
Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower.
Right.
Purple Haze.
Yeah.
Wind Cries Mary.
But Lemmy, conversely, is going to be best known for this one song.
Okay, Hawkwind, Silver Machine.
Yeah.
You know, and Lemmy sang that.
Yeah, yeah. So well, actually. I love that song.
He was great on that. And as he told me, he was the last one to try out as the vocalist on that because they resented him being a star. And it became a huge hit. And he said the best thing of all was he ended up on the cover of NME on his own without the rest of them. And he goes, they fucking hated it. I think that's one of the other reasons people loved interviewing him was they couldn't stop laughing at what he would tell them.
Yeah.
Truth is always funny.
Right.
Until it isn't.
Yeah.
Lemmy could have said that.
Yeah.
But didn't.
But we can attribute it to him.
Well, we can. Actions. In your lying, fucked up world, we can. But, you know, you and Ian conspiring to peddle untruths and filth. Well, whereas look, I am of a purer...
A pure heart. And listeners, if you believe that, you will believe anything. So on that bombshell, I would like to thank Mick Ward. I'd like to thank 7 Digital, our producers. Now, our next episode, Mick, is going to be about another legend. I think legend is not too high a word to use of this gentleman.
Absolutely.
You knew him rather well. I met him a couple of times, so we'll be talking largely about your experiences.
And there's a link here, isn't there?
There is a link, which I'm about to embark on.
I like this.
Well, he's like Lemmy, isn't he, in many ways. He's like Lemmy because he was in other bands before he found success as his own band leader, of which he was the only constant, was he not, for many decades.
Yeah, and he wasn't conventionally good-looking.
Or at all good-looking. We could also say... He lived in Los Angeles, rather like Lemmy, although originally he was not from there.
No.
And the link which I'm about to drop in with Amazing Genius is not written by me, it's written by Ian, the producer.
It's my favourite bit, go on.
And I'm going to read it off. They have a Rainbow connection.
They do!
One of them was in Rainbow for some time. Lemmy, on the other hand, was always in the Rainbow itself.
Booyah!
There we go.
Booyah! Right?
Listen, everyone, if you could please get in touch with us through the Twitter page and the Facebook page where you click the link to listen to this, that'd be fantastic. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know, if you would, your feedback on the show, if you have any suggestions for future episodes, and it would be wonderful to hear from you again. And Mick, any last words from you?
No.
And that's it. Thank you very much. Goodbye, everyone. See you next time. If you enjoyed this, then please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast and be sure to share it on social media.
If you must.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.